Welcome to the podcast. You made it once again, and Clint Casper is our guest on this one, so that's even more exciting. If you ever felt bad about yourself, about your hunting, Clint Casper will make you feel that way, because he's a highly motivated individual. The podcast is presented by HHA Sports, Scent Crusher, Loophold, Thermacy, Victory Archery, Gator Outdoors, Elite Archery, Big Time, Old Barn Taxidermy, and we are thankful for our partners. And that's me getting to business, because this is a getting to business type of podcast, sort of. Clint is literally driving to go spend time in the backcountry by himself, and if that is not motivating for all you mother effers that are scared to walk to your stand in the dark, maybe think about where you're at in life, right? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You're in Illinois, you're in Iowa, you're scared of like a 35-pound coyote. You're listening to your neighbors say he saw a koi dog run through the yard the other day, and you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Some other dude's like, I swear there's mountain lions around here. And you're like, yeah, dude, there probably is, but I saw a wolf. It was black. And you're like, nah, dude, it's a black German shepherd. It wasn't a wolf.
It's your neighbor's dog.
But none of that exists right now. Coyote ain't going to get you. So think about that. Steve, if you're listening, he's scared of the dark. That's why I said that.
I'm terrified of the dark.
He just won't admit it, which is why it's funnier, because we know he is.
I don't know how Clint can drive and do a podcast at the same time for how hyped up he is.
Yeah, definitely.
How many crashes do you think he almost got in?
Well, I don't know about that, but I caught him on the tail end of his trip rather than the beginning. So I don't know if like that he's more excited or less excited then, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he works. If you're just really jacked excited, then you get tired and it wears off, then you get excited as you get closer. I don't know. But anyway, that's a podcast here. It's just Clint and I bullshitting, recorded last second type of thing. So literally going out and spending time in the backcountry by himself. Pretty inspiring, pretty stupid, pretty awesome all at the same time. You got kids, Clint. You got to think about these things, man. Hope you enjoy the podcast.
I'm Chase Rolfson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody. It's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys. This is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Mutt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
Hey, this is Jules McQueen, and you are listening to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast.
It's really, really not that good.
Working Class Bowhunter. What is up? Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter, and via road noise phone, Clint Casper. What's up, dude?
What's up, my man? I'm trying to keep the humming on the 35s down to a minimum, but going 70-75, that's kind of rough in the F-150.
Well, I think for where you're going and the situation that we're recording this podcast last second, I don't think anybody's going to judge you for tearing up the road, getting out west.
This is true. I'm about 16 and a half hours into my journey to Colorado, so it's for a good purpose that you're hearing the humming.
Yeah, right. It's very fitting. It's very working class of you. So thank you.
It is. Driving, it'll be like, I think it was almost 27 hours from my house to the trailhead I'm going to start at. So it's a working class fucking adventure, that's for sure.
Okay, and you were just in Utah like a week ago.
Last week, let's see, what the hell day is today? Today's last week at this time. Devin and I had just packed out Taylor's buck, and we're getting ready to, I've been glassing for Devin right now, and then about 2 hours from now, we would have been cooking fresh backstraps over coals in the middle of the Wasatch Front up in the high country.
So, yeah, fuck, dude, yeah.
It was fucking epic. Yeah, man, it was fun. It was so much fun to go out and help them guys, and Taylor got a good buck, and we chased a couple good ones around for Dev, and yeah, man, it was fun. It was four or five days of, you know, just kind of like a, you know, just sort of, you know, kind of, it's cool to be able to go out there and not have a bow and just be running the glass and running a walkie-talkie and
bring like a different perspective to it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just fun. You know what I mean? Like I like that almost as much as I like hunting. I mean, I get so pumped up for those guys, like when they're going on stalks and when they're doing shit, like, you know, I'm trying to get stuff done and like, as far as help them and map out a stalk and keep them in my glass so I can figure out where they're going. And it's like, it's just a whole different type of anxiety. Like, I think I get more nervous for them than I do like myself when I'm on a stalk. Cause like, I just feel like I know what I'm doing as far as like, I know what moves I'm going to make. But when I'm watching them, I'm on one mountain, they're on another. And it's like, I think I know what they're going to do, but I don't know. So I'm there like talking to myself, like, fuck, don't move, Devin. Don't move. Okay. Okay. All right. He's good. Okay, go. His head's down. Go. You know, like, I'm on the walkie, like, cover ground. No.
Yeah, you're, like, yeah. Silently coaching. Well, yeah, I guess technically sometimes you're not always silently coaching, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
A lot of times, you know, we'll run radios, and, you know, you're trying to, like, you know, glass and guide a guy in.
There it goes.
Yeah, it's fun, man. It's definitely fun. It was a hell of a good trip, and it's a good kind of kickoff for me before I start in on my what I like to call the title fight of the year. For me, is always this Colorado trip. So
yeah.
It's a good little practice run for 4 or 5 days, covered about 60 miles. So
right.
definitely got after it.
That's badass, man. I wish I could have gone out there. It looked like an awesome time. And I know how fun Devin is to share camp with, so I was seeing your pictures and videos, pretty jealous. But so for most of our Midwest listeners that always want to go west or, you know, planning their first trip west, it's – and we've done some podcasts in the past with you and I, you know, staying motivated with Clint Casper, and I know that's been a really popular episode. But how do you stay motivated – to chase western game but then come back home to whitetails? Because if someone's never done that, like gone out west, done the different style of hunting, it all seems fresh and new and exciting, and then you come back home into whitetails, which everybody loves their whitetails, but things change a little once you start chasing them out west and come back to stand sitting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, like I try to just embrace every hunt for what it's worth and not compare and contrast, because I mean, you know, like I was in Utah, then I'm going to Colorado, chase muleys solo, and then I'm going to fly out. Like I get back for a week, and then I go back to Utah on a over-the-counter bull tag to go chase the rut and go chase bugles around. So it's like, you know, I've got all, you know, I basically had 3 western hunts before my whitetail season kicks off, and it's like they're all, each one of those hunts a little bit different. 2 of them solo, 1 of them was, you know, with buddies, 2 mule deer, 1 elk. So it's like everything's, you know, it's all a different game. So I try to just look at them all like they're their own hunt, you know, and I try not to compare. Cause I mean, realistically, if I'm being brutally honest, I mean, stand hunting for me now, if we're going to get down to the meat and potatoes, it is boring. I mean,
it's boring when you first get back, I think, but then you kind of adjust back to your old ways, like your old like mindset.
Well, for me, it's like, the sitting there just in the 20 by 20 square, 20 feet up, like that has, you know, kind of, that's boring to me because I love to, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I feel like I was built to run the glass and spot stalk game. Like I love to do that. But where whitetail hunting always has that fire though, is the anticipation of you're playing the game, you're playing the chess match. Like I know a buck's here. I'm on pins and needles, hoping he does what I think he's going to do. So it's like that mental game and that chess match is what I love about whitetail hunting, because western game, it's like patterns. Ah, man. I mean, it's hard to pattern an elk that can travel 10 miles in a day. It's hard to pattern a mule deer that can cover 10, 12 miles in a day. I mean, you know, they get bumped. They might not be back for 5 days. I mean, it's a different type of game.
Yeah.
Whereas the whitetails are more strategic, and I love that about it. I mean, so, like I said, I try to look at each hunt in its own different way. And the thing I love about whitetails is that chess match with, usually I'm in a core area of a big buck, or I'm in between bedding and feeding transition zone, or I'm, I'm hunting a I'm hunting something that realistically I know he's using or should be using, and it's like you're playing that waiting game. And I try not to just think about the hundreds and hundreds of hours that I might be sitting in my little square. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's also different too, like when you're when you brink into that next level of like what whitetail hunting is, when it takes you a little bit, you finally find what a buck's doing, and then then the game really starts. Like then you're really breaking it down
And
it gets strategic.
Honest,
even though you are sitting, everything else is the hunt, really.
That's the part that I love about whitetails the most is the game planning. As far as everyone knows, I'm huge on the moon phases. I'm huge on the wind. I love to study that. I love to try to crack that code and figure out in July, August, September. Okay, this buck shows up 70% of the time in daylight on an east wind, or on red moon days he's always in daylight an hour before it's dark. I love playing that mad scientist deal and trying to figure out what a big whitetail is going to do before he does it, based off of what he likes about that farm or what he likes about that piece of ground. And that's really fun for me. I get more geeked out on that than I do actually just sitting there, waiting on him to come, because it's like that build up is what's fun. And a lot of times I'm chasing a specific buck or a specific couple bucks to where I'm only going to kill maybe that deer or one of two deer. So it's like, that's a whole nother phase that I've gotten into in the last, say, 7-8 years, is hunting, targeting a specific buck or two. And that's really fun. That's a fun game. Cause you get kicked in the teeth more than you actually score. And it's like, I'm constantly scratching my head, walking back to my truck going, damn it, that didn't go as planned, or shit, he didn't do what I thought he would. I got to go back to the drawing board.
Is Ohio a 1 or 2 buck state?
No, 1 buck state. Thank God. One buck.
Yeah. So then you're even mapped out even more, it changes things. Illinois as a resident with a bow is, you can shoot 2 bucks. So yeah. I was hunting Creepy last year, but I didn't kill Creepy till almost the second week of December. So, if I would have shot that first buck, it just maps it out. Like, I might not have shot my first buck knowing I'm still trying to figure out what Creepy's doing,
Yeah. Well, then, if Steve wouldn't have come over and basically showed you what Creepy was doing, you never would have killed him anyway.
Right.
So, realistically, you kind of got to throw the shout out to Steve there, because he pretty much put Creepy in your lap.
Yeah, he did. He mapped me out. He said, hey, I hung your stand for you. It's 200 yards that way. You can't miss it. Just get in there and be quiet and be still, and then you'll kill him.
He loves Creepy loves the west wind, high pressure days on the half, those half red moon and up days. He's all over it, man. You got to hunt those days. He pretty much laid the golden road for you, which was awesome of him, because he kind of owed you anyway.
He did owe me. He did. So we're even.
Yeah. Shout out to Steve.
Can you imagine if that actually happened? It'd blow everybody's
Number
mind.
Number one, you would never, ever hear the end of that. Honestly, I feel like it wouldn't even be worth killing that buck, because you would hear about that daily until the day he died.
Oh,
daily.
Yeah. Good thing that something like that's not possible to happen. It's kind of funny. That'd be like me winning an ultra marathon versus like Brian Barney. Like, it will never happen, could never happen.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I've hunted and done some training with him and got to see his regimen. And I'm not going to count you out completely, but you got a lot of work to do if you're going to go run with Brian Barney, because that's a fucking madman there.
Oh, I know. Yeah, there's no way. I don't have it in me for that. It's just not what I'm into, but same thing. It's just not what Steve's into as well.
Right.
So what are you going to Colorado for?
Mule deer, my man.
Same area as last year or what?
No, this will be my 5th year in Colorado, 5th different unit. I've never hunted the same unit.
No kidding. Why?
I love the unknown factor. I like the adventure. I feel like it's cool to get in a unit and find success. But realistically, though, in my opinion, you're not learning much, because typically from year to year, the same basins are going to hold bucks. The same saddles are going to get used. The same, there's a lot of the same, and every unit's different. Every unit's got, timber lines at different elevation. There's green grass at elevation. You know, there's the basins sit different. You know, you got your, you know, some units there's more like low land and desert tomb than high country and vice versa. And it's just, I'm obsessed with bow hunting mule deer. If I could only hunt one animal, and I've said this before, and I know people get mind blown because, I mean, I've always been a huge whitetail guy, and I do love whitetails, but if I could only bow hunt one animal for the rest of my life, it'd be mule deer. I mean, I just think...
Mule deer in that, like, backcountry setting, or what?
Just anywhere, honestly. I mean, I just feel like they take you to the next level as far as adventure. I mean, like, they live in some of the gnarliest, coolest places, like, whether it's, you know, I mean, some of the desert stuff is crazy what they can, you know, how they can endure the heat, and how they can live in some of those cactus flats and sagebrush, and then you've got the foothills, that's cool, you know, how they use that rolling country, and then you got your high country stuff that I absolutely love high country just because, I mean, everywhere you look, it's a picture. I mean, when you're hunting at 12, 13, 14,000 feet, everywhere you look could be a postcard. And I mean, I just, there's times where I'll be putting a stalk on, or I'm, you know, walking off a ridge line, trying to go from one glassing point to the next, and I'll just stop and look around and be like, holy fuck, man, like, how did I get here? Like, you know, like, it's just crazy for me to be in that setting, because it's,
yeah,
it's just such an adventure, you know, from start to finish. I mean, you know, that's just kind of, and that's why I like hunting different units, because different units make you, I feel like, you know, stone, you know, like steel sharpens steel, and it's like, if I hunt different units and I hunt different areas, I'm going to be a better mule deer hunter each and every year. I'm just going to keep building and building. And like, I want to get to the point to where there's no habitat or environment or place in the lower 48 that I can't go kill a big mule deer buck or go find a big buck. And like, I just want to be as well-rounded. I mean, I plan on hunting at least one, if not two or three mule deer hunts every single year. I mean, I love it. I mean, it's just, I've just fallen in love with that game, man. And, you know, I think some years you draw better tags than others. And it's like on those really, really good tags, man, you know, you might only draw some of those, you know, top notch units once every 10, 12 years. Hell, sometimes you might only draw one once in your life. And it's like, I want to hunt them every single year, no matter what, different units, and just constantly be racking my brain on scouting and e-scouting and just figuring it out. And then whenever I do get those tags and I get to go chase like next level giants, or I'm in a unit that's got, you know, it's just known for multiple 200s, or, you know, whatever the case may be, it's like I feel like I'm 100% ready for that. Like, you know, I've hunted so many different places and figured out how to find deer that this is just another unit, another hunt. It's just like it's not as big of a deal in my mind because I've already like done so many different ones. So
what if last year when you killed your big boy on your way out, if you saw like a 200 plus, would you be like, oh, I'm coming back next year and gonna find him?
I did. He was the third big, that deer was the third biggest deer I found on my trip.
Oh yeah, but I mean, like, so how you said you just try not to come back, like,
oh I mean it, like, there's giants in every unit, so I mean, I realistically, like, you know, it would be, I definitely want to hunt that unit again because I loved it. It's that unit last year was the prettiest place I think I've ever been. Like, you were in Wyoming this year, and you got to see the little grays and big grays area over there at Unit G, and that is beautiful. I mean, beautiful. But if you were to double that, that is what it looked like at 14,000 feet where I was mule deer hunting last year this time. I mean, it was what you saw in Wyoming, but twice as good.
Really?
I mean, it was, oh yeah. Yep. I would go back to that unit. Let me rephrase that. I will go back to that unit just because of the views. There's big deer there, 100%, but literally it's the prettiest place on planet Earth I've ever been so far. And I've hunted damn near every western state there is.
Yeah.
And it was breathtaking everywhere I was at. And it was steep, it was rugged. I mean, you know, it was just fun, man, you know. And
so do you ever feel like Colorado, because everyone wants to go out west and Colorado's like the closest like big time western state, you know, they have a huge elk population, tons of mule deer. Like, Colorado pretty much has everything, if you think about it. Do you think, like, when you're out there, do you run into a lot of people? Do you think it's getting crowded in Colorado, or what's kind of your outlook on that?
Oh, I mean, there's tons of people. I mean, if it's a lot of it's hikers, bikers. I mean, I've been in units where it was nothing to see 30, 40 people on a Saturday. Oh, yeah. Yep. The second year I was in Colorado solo, so there was this, like, I don't even know what the terminology is, but like a, it was like a hike, bike, jog. It's not a triathlon because there wasn't like swimming.
Just like a little expedition or something.
Yeah. And dude, there were like 100 contestants that were running around this course, maybe 2 miles from where I was at. I was watching it through my spotter and I'm just like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like,
did that make you get the hell out of there? Or like, what was your mindset? Like, when you see shit like that, you know, it's gotta be kind of frustrating.
I mean, it's frustrating, but I mean, animals get used to it. I mean, I just shifted over a couple basins and tried to find some basins that had had more cover to them and just had some more hidey hole, like cliffy type shit with a lot of shadows in it where deer could get into and just really feel like they were going to be hidden. And I mean, within a day I got back into bucks and stuff, but it was just, that's the thing about that though, is man, you just got to be able to like adapt. And that's what's so cool. That's the one thing I love about solo hunting is it's like, you don't bounce ideas off of anybody. You know what I mean? Like you just like, I'm out there and all spring and summer, you know, you're training, you're shooting, you're preparing, you're planning, you're thinking about shit. And then once I actually get here and I cut my legs loose, like there's no planning. It's just react. It's just react. Like you know what I mean? Like whatever I run into, it's now on me to just react to it. And how I react to it is how I react to it. You know, it might be totally different than what Brian would do or you would do or Devin would do or Dan would do or whatever. But like, that's what I love about it though, is it's all going to ride or die on me and I will sink or swim off of my own beliefs and my own judgment. And for me, like dealing with people, dealing with pressure, figuring out how to overcome that and how to adapt and react to that, like as fucking crazy as that sounds, like I love that shit. I like the adversity. You know what I mean? Like I like having to.
Well, when you go out solo like this, like do you miss like the fellowship of camp and stuff when you're solo, or do you kind of enjoy the like? Do you enjoy like the grit of like I'm by myself, like I'm doing it, like this is not something a lot of people do.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I mean, like for, you know, those 5 days, man, me and Devin were teamed up, and then we teamed up with our buddy Taylor the day he killed his buck. And I mean, fuck, dude, that was a blast, man. I mean, you can't be hunting with your buddies up on a mountain and chasing muleys around. And I mean, that was fun as hell. But the solo thing, man, it's, you know, it's one of those things, like, it's not built for everybody. And I get asked this a lot. I mean, at least a couple times a week, you know, it's not for everybody. I mean, it's really not, you know, I tell everybody to go try it because you'll never know if you don't try it. But
yeah,
like,
how would you know?
Yeah, like you just won't because there's nothing like it. Like, you know, for me, I just think it's cool that from start to finish, it's me versus me. Like it's not, this hunt will not come down to me versus a mule deer, me versus a mountain, me versus a storm. It'll come down to me versus me, like
mentally or what?
Oh, 100% mentally and physically. Like, I mean, I know going into this, I'll have times where I'm going to be frustrated. I'm going to be pissed off. I'm going to be wishing I had somebody to bounce an idea off of, or I'm going to be bored, or I'm going to have a lonely spell, or, you know, you're sitting out there and you spend all day glassing, all day hiking, and you might go 2 or 3 days and not see what you want. And it's like you're scratching your head like, you know, fuck, man, like what, you know, what am I doing? But it's like that's the stuff, though, where it's you versus you. Like you got to be in your own head and keep yourself motivated, keep yourself hungry, keep yourself, you know, basically keep that engine running, because sooner or later, like you're going to get your opportunity. And it's like, you know, I've always said, you know, persistence and patience will eventually pay off, and that'll breed success. Now, success might come in to you get one stock, and that's not going to be a guaranteed on a shot. But, like, in my head, all I can ask for is one solid stock attempt. And, I mean, I treat everyone like it's the last fucking one I'm ever going to do in my life. I mean,
yeah.
From start to finish, there is, like, if I think a stock's going to be half-assed or there's not a good way for me to do it, I'm not doing it. Like, it's either all in or I'm not going.
Isn't that like the saying you always hear people don't waste time on low percentage stocks?
Yeah, well, that, and I mean, like, it's got to be a stock that, you know, you're just 100%, like, you know, in the back of your head, your abilities and you're mentally like, okay, yep, this is it. Like, this is the one, like, this is my play, you know? And it's like, I don't know. I mean, the solo thing, you know, I think it's 99% mental because you can,
100%. I can see that all day.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you can get yourself out of the game so quick. Like, you have a bad day on the mountain. You're just frustrated. You're tired. You're hungry. I mean, fuck, I'm sleeping in deer beds. I'm sleeping in elk beds. You're on the side of, you know, cliffs all day, and you're crawling around the rocks, and you're there's a lot of parts to these hunts that aren't fun, but it's that, you know, 2 hours on a stock that you get to spend, or it's whenever you do score, you're packing out and you got your buck on your back and you're just like, fuck, man, I did it. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's, you've got to keep into perspective why you're there. Like, I'm out here doing this because I just absolutely fucking love it. From, you know, start to finish, the adventure from jumping in my truck, going out there hunting and driving back till I get out and step on my sidewalk at my house. Like, it's an adventure from start to finish. And I love that. And that's, sometimes you got to, like, remind yourself as to what the hell you're doing, why you're doing it. Like, you know, I mean, it's easy to kind of forget that, but I'm my biggest critic, and I always have been. So it's like, I hold myself super accountable for my headspace and how I think. And it's like, man, the minute I even start to feel like, fuck, I'm getting a little negative, like, dude, I knocked that shit out. Right. I mean, immediately, dude, like, I mean, it sounds psycho, but I have had many a talks with myself on the sides of fucking mountains. I'm just like, Clint, don't you even start your bullshit. Like, you ain't fucking, you know, like, this is it, dude. Like, don't even start in on this shit. Like, I mean, it's fun, don't get me wrong, but I treat this stuff as like, you know, it's a freaking business, you know, it's a business trip, you know? I mean, it's fun, don't get me wrong, but I flip that switch. Like, my switch hunting with buddies versus my switch in solo mode, it's a different switch.
I can see that for sure. Well, too, it's like, you guys like us, when we take our vacation, we're not really, like, yeah, we're doing what we want to do, but it's not really a vacation. Like, we're probably working harder on the hunt than we would at work.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's never a day at home that I'm going to drop and gain 3,000 feet of elevation and walk 14 miles. Never. Never. I mean, I couldn't do that at home if I wanted to do that.
Right.
And I mean, like, the other day, me and Devin walked 14 mile. We had to drop down 1,500 feet. We got 300 ounces of water, which is like 30-some pounds or whatever, and had to go back up 1,500 feet to get back up to our camp.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, that's 3,000 feet of elevation gained and lost, 15 miles. I mean, dude, we were fucking beat. But, I mean, that was the closest water source. Like, I mean, there was, you know, like, up there, there was nowhere to get water. That was it.
Yeah.
I mean, there was one spot, so we had to drop down and get it. And it's like, it was straight down, straight up. I mean, it was miserable. But now, back at home, I'm never going to have to do that. Never even have to do anything even remotely close to that. So
right.
It's like, you know.
Nor could you if you had to.
No, hell no, dude. I live at like 580 freaking feet of elevation.
right. Yeah, same here in Illinois.
But. Yeah.
Well, hey, right. What's your goal for deer on this trip? I mean, are you just looking for a mature buck, or are you trying to break that?
Yep.
That nope. 160 mark, 170 mark.
I mean, solid, you know, 4 or 5 year old or older buck. I would love to be in that 170 and up. I mean, you know, that's typically a stud 4x4. That's, say, 4 or 5. You know, that's just a straight typical. I mean, he's going to be right there in that 170 and up mark, you know, usually. But I mean, Dude, honestly, like, it's, you know, so much of that is just situational. I mean, I've seen 150-inch three-by-threes that are 30 inches wide, and they're not going to score for shit, but just monstrosity of a deer that I would have shot all day and been just as thrilled as the buck I killed last year. Like,
yeah.
You know, so it's just kind of one of them things, man. I'm just so hungry for that freaking opportunity, dude. Like, I cannot wait to have the bow in my hand and be like, okay, yep, I got him bedded. It's 1 o'clock. Thermals are rising. Wind's in my face. Fucking here we go, dude. Strap them up. I can't wait to send it on that freaking, you know, that first one, dude. I'm so stoked.
What are you expecting in this unit? I mean, is it a notoriously steep unit? Is it kind of got a mix of everything? Or, I mean, I got lucky enough to see roughly where you killed your deer last year. You know, we chatted and talked through Onyx, and it looked very steep and difficult. So how's this unit compared to that one?
So it's down in the same area, so very, very similar. You know, you're going to be camping, hunting, hiking, pretty much living at 13,000 and up, typically for probably most of the hunt. So, you know, you're going to play into the weather. Every day I'll see sunshine that'll burn the back of your hands. I'll see hail. I'll see snow. I'll see a rainbow. I'll see wind. I'll see lightning, which I fucking hate. And I'll see, high winds. I mean, that's just every day, you know. I mean, it's high country.
When you're doing a hunt like that and you're back in there, give me a ballpark range on how many deer would you say you'll see a day?
Man, it's hard to say because, like, you know, a lot of times you might run into a bachelor group of bucks that say there's 5 or 6 bucks, and they might be the only deer in a basin, but one of those is going to be a buck you'd kill. So you're going to babysit that group. Like, my eyes won't even leave that basin all day. So it's like, you know what I mean? It depends. I mean, I might have to look at, so let's say on a Tuesday, my first glassing point, I glass till 8 o'clock. I see 7, 8 deer, nothing that's worthwhile. I move, go to the next spot at 9 o'clock. Now I'm basically catching bucks and does that are either have fed and now they've gotten up one last time, or they're feeding late, working into where they're going to bed for the day, or I'm trying to glass them already bedded. You might see another 7, 8 deer. So yeah, I've seen 16 deer now, but I haven't found the one. You could do that all day and see 30, 40 deer, or if you're in a spot where there's no deer, you could do that all day and not see a fucking deer. I mean, it just, yeah. You know what I mean? Like you've got to kind of, what I like to do is when I find deer, I like to take note of where they're at, elevation, what they're feeding on. That stuff will play into your hand no matter where you're at in that unit, because if a lot of deer are feeding at 13,000 to 12,800, that tells me that the super lush, like the greenest grass right now, is actually a little bit lower than the upper part of that, which is probably like 13,800. So the grass will start to brown off the higher it is because it's closer to the sun. So as that green lush feed line starts to work down the mountain, so will the deer. So I pay attention to that. Like, I might not be finding a big buck, but if I'm finding deer at a certain level, that's the level that probably all the deer in the unit are going to be at right now, because that's where the feed's at. And I mean, I'm going to use a term from the man himself, old Brian Barney, you know, the deer are where the deer like to be. The elk are where the elk like to be. I mean, you can look at a spot and go, God, this looks great. But if you glass it for all morning and don't see a deer, chances are there's just not a fucking deer in there. So realistically, like, you can sit there and hope and pray and try to make one appear, but realistically, you're wasting your time. I mean, it's like, you know, you got to go find deer. And then once you find deer, I'm constantly asking myself, okay, why are deer here? Like, where, you know, maybe it's a north facing slope. And there's a lot of snow runoff, which is creating a ton of green feed, and they're at 13,000 feet. So now I'm going to get on Onyx, or I'm going to get on Go Hunter. I'm going to get on my phone, and I'm going to start looking for basins and spots that look exactly like this, that's close to me, because chances are those same spots connect the dots are going to have deer in them like this spot does.
Yeah, yeah. So run me through like a day. You get up, you know, it's getting daylight. Are you getting up to a spot to glass for what, you know, deer 30 in the morning and deer 30 in the afternoon, and then getting to your destination or changing destination middle of the day, or, you know?
So I try to be up, you know, roughly two and a half hours before it's going to crack daylight. I want to be on. You don't get a lot of sleep on these hunts because I don't leave the mountain until it's dark, and then you've usually got an hour or so hike back to your camp or however long, depending on how far out you are. You get back, you grab something to eat, you sleep a few hours, and then it's time to get up and do it all over again. So I try to shoot for 5 hours of sleep. Six is great. A lot of times six and seven doesn't happen. It's usually more of that 5 to 6 range, but that's just kind of what you got to run on. It seems like that's kind of where I'm always at. So I get up. And I've already got a glassing point determined. I want to get there well before daylight, be set up to where as soon as the lights come on, I'm there, I'm ready. I'm going to glass for, if I'm seeing deer, I'm going to continue to sit there for hour, two and a half, 3 hours until I feel like I've seen every deer there. If I'm not seeing deer, after an hour or two, typically that means there's not deer there, I'm going to make a move. If I'm in a spot where there's a lot of deer and I feel like there's more deer in there, I just haven't found a big buck, but for whatever reason, I just have that feeling like there's a big buck in that basin, I might stay all day, but I will move around. And mule deer hunting, glassing wise, is a game of angles. You know, mm-hmm. you could be glassing north and see 10 deer, and then you get an angle from the east, and now you're looking at that hillside or that basin or that rock slide from a different angle, and you pick up 3 or 4 more deer. So it's like when I get to an area that I'm like, okay, I'm going to spend the day here. Like I've got a big buck in here, or I'm pretty sure there is a big buck in here, or I just feel like I need to spend all day. I'm going to pick 4 or 5 points that I can glass from different angles, and I'm going to cover that sucker from A to Z, Z to A, 1 to 10, 10 to 1. I mean, there will be no stone left unturned. I'm going to run I love to glass with my binos on a tripod. And then once I've covered everything with that, I'm going to put my big spotter on. And now I'm going to start picking apart shadows. I'm going to pick apart, you know, I'm going to pick apart cliffs. I'm going to pick apart the rock bands. And I'm literally going to now pick the same hillside apart with my spotter. Then if I'm still feeling confident and I feel like, okay, this is my spot, I'm going to stay here all day, I'm going to get a different angle and do the same thing again. I'm going to run it all with my binos. I'm going to take a little break, eat a snack. I'm going to put the spotter on, and I'm going to cover that son of a bitch the whole way with my spotter.
Let me ask you this, Clint, because I'm getting more into the Western game as the years go by. Yep. You're someone that's way more seasoned than me. You're the most Western dude in the Midwest that's without ever living out there, is what it seems. But so I've discovered what good quality glass is. You know, we work with Leupold, absolutely love. And I know you're not a Leupold guy, but I am. Well, I absolutely love it.
Good glass. I mean, I've had their stuff in the past. I mean, you know, for the money, quality, I mean, can't go wrong with any of their stuff. I've run their binos before, their range finders. I mean, definitely solid stuff.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. Like, I just love it. Like, I don't know, I love handling my binos. It's kind of just like, I feel naked without them now. And I never used to hunt with binos attached to me. Now they don't leave me. You know, it's something that is now one of the top tools. You know, I got my Leupold binos, the rangefinder, everything on my harness, and I'm good to go. Well, I just got a spotting scope, and I'm kind of in the market for a good tripod and setup like that. So, like, what do you use? Because you said you use your binos on a tripod to look, and then you switch out and put your spotter on. So, are you using the same tripod, or how's this all work?
Yep. So, I've got a Suru. It's a 024. And which is just a model, but basically it'll fold. So it's all carbon. It's got 3 sections of legs. It's got a really, really, really good fluid head on it. It's got a Suru VA5 fluid head. So it'll fold down from like 16 inches all the way to like 58. So you could, 99% of your glassing is going to be sitting down. Ton of adjustability. Super lightweight. What I do is I've got a bino adapter that I can plug right into the head. My binos sit on it. I run a strap over it, and now my binos are now on my tripod. So when I want to switch to my spotter, I take my binos off, put them back in my harness on my chest. I switch out my adapters. So I take the bino adapter off my fluid head. Takes 1 second, switch it out, put my spotter on. It's already got an adapter plate hooked on the bottom of it. Within 2 seconds, I can go from my bino adapter to my spotting scope on the tripod. Boom, you're back in the game, ready to go.
How much does that tripod run? Because you can spend as much as you want on, just like glass, however much you want to spend, you can spend on it.
So the tripod.
If you don't know off the top of your head, we can just talk about it later because I want to look in again.
I think right now on Go Hunt, you can get that sucker, the combo, so the head, fluid head, and the legs. I think it's either $299 or $399.
Goo, but I bet you it's worth it. It's got to be worth it.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Oh, yeah. Yep. And then the adapter plates are like $30. So I've got an adapter plate for my Canon camera. I got an adapter plate for my bino, my bino adapter, and then I've got an adapter plate for my spotter. So I got three adapter plates to where I can switch all those within a second. Just boom, boom, boom. And then you've got your fluid head and your tripod. But the biggest thing is a lot of people want to skimp on, they'll buy a good spotter, then they skimp on a tripod, and here's what you run into. You run into a shitty tripod that the fluid heads, either the fluid head sucks and the legs are okay, or the legs suck and the fluid head's, really good. And it's like, it does you no good to have sweet glass and have the accessories, but have a shitty head or a shitty set of legs, because that's your foundation. So it would be like you buying a badass truck, but you put recapped used tires on it and expect to go travel for the next 3 years and not blow them out.
Oh, dude.
I mean, that's basically it's basically like, it's the same thing.
That's why I'm in the market for a good tripod. I bust this badass loophole spotting scope out of the package and throw it on my shitty tripod, and the thing's sitting there bouncing. And I'm just
that's the other thing. Like, for wind, you've got to have something that's heavy enough to support you, as far as it's not blowing all over the place. Now, the nice thing about this Suru, it's got a hook on the bottom. So if it's really, really windy, I'll take my Nalgene bottle or my pack and I hook it to the bottom to where it's just even more stability, to where like there's absolutely no way you're going to. Yeah. Which is really nice. Really cool feature.
Just weighs it down more.
Yep, so basically, like, I could hook 32 ounces of water to the bottom of that tripod to give it more weight to where I can make – because glassing is all about being steady and being able to be really fluid in your motion. Like, I mean, there's days where I'm behind the glass 6-7 hours. I mean, literally, you're burning your eyes out. That's why I tell people, buy the best glass you can afford, because if you have shitty glass or you've got a shitty glassing setup, you're only going to be able to do it for an hour or two, and you're literally going to have a screwed up back, a screwed up neck. You know, you're going to be so frustrated, and if you're not going to kill mule deer without glass. I mean, if you're going to get into them, with elk, totally different game. You're not relying on glass. I mean, honestly, a lot of my elk hunts, I don't even bring a spotter with me. I'm just running my 11x45 binos on a tripod. Mm-hmm. I don't even fuck with a spotter. But mule deer, you're picking apart shadows, and it's a spot and stalk game where you've got to know where they're at. I mean, there's no calling. You're not running and gunning. Like, it's a glasser's game. So that setup has to be, like, I would rather my glassing setup be top-notch and have a mid-level bow than the other way around. 100%.
I can see that one. Yeah, I can absolutely see that. That's something I'm going to do. I was trying to research like tripods and stuff like that. And, then I want to get a phone scope so I can just, add to the fun of it.
Phone scopes are awesome, man. I'll be getting some good phone scope footage on this trip. I just got their new adapter for my, I run all Maven stuff, like, but I got their big 80 millimeter spotter. So I can really, I can zoom in and like count freaking hairs on deer's noses with that thing. So I'm looking forward to getting some really good phone scope footage to be able to share with everybody. And
Yeah,
throw it on a story and stuff.
My plan was to get a phone scope set up for my old phone so I can take that with me and have that full battery charged for just taking photos and video through the phone scope. So
yep.
I'm going to
yep.
buy the case this week, but and I was going to get the universal adapter so I could put it on my binos and my spotter. Then they're all out of them online.
So
I got hosed.
I'll make sure I send you some screenshots of the stuff I got, and then that way you can check it out.
I can post it with this episode if I got the okay.
Yep.
But that's cool. I like that optics talk because it's something I never played into my game until I started hunting out west. But then I realized like how one, it's more fun. Like if you're sitting in a tree stand, like you can just look at things, or you might see something. You can look and like really confirm what it is or isn't. But even like seeing like a deer or a buck come in from a distance, you know, I'll watch them and just kind of see what they got going on. And then, I mean, you know, there's some deer from a distance, you're like, oh, man, that might be a shooter. And you look in, you're like, oh, well, his two's busted. I didn't see that, and it's not really what I'm looking for. You know, whatever you're after. I love having my binos. It adds, like, a layer of confidence. It just feels a part of me. I put my wind checker on there. You can slide your phone in the back, like, pocket and all that. It's great.
Yep. And, I mean, honestly, I use my binos a lot in the whitetail woods and the turkey woods to pass the time. I mean,
yeah.
I'll get my 11x45s out and I'll start scoping out rubs and scrapes across the woodlot, or, oh man, you know, the farmer down the road's taking off corn and beans. I'll check him out. And I mean, like, honestly, like, I'm always panning around, like, when nothing's going on, I'm always looking at shit and just like passing the time by damn near scouting with my glass. Like, you know, I'll start looking at the edge of fields, like, man, can I see any scrapes from here or rubs or, you know, or,
yeah.
Oh, dude, you know, I'm hunting deer, but there's a big flock of turkeys over there. You know, how many longbeards is in that group? Like, you know, just kind of
well, that too, like low light when you see like something, like, oh, there's something out there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think it's a buck, you know, and then you can put a put glass on them. Like, oh shit, that's a pretty good buck. They let in more light than your eyes ever will at sometimes, you know. So
oh, absolutely, dude. And that's the thing is, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people, they don't understand. I shouldn't say understand. They're not harnessing the power of what optics can actually do for you in the woods. I mean, I can't tell you how many times my binos just freehanding them, how many times that has saved me on a buck or a bird or even out west. I mean, like, for example, like when I'm on a stalk, I am constantly scanning for I start my stalk. We'll say it's midday. I got this buck bedded. It's 250 yards out. He's in this rock band. I got to go out around a basin, come up over the saddle, and drop in from above. That's my plan. I'm going to have the, you know, it's the middle of the day, so your thermals are rising. They're going up the mountain. Your winds, you know, your wind and thermals are going to be in your face. I'm going to drop straight down on him and kill him. Okay. So I know where the buck's at. I know where his buddies are at. Now my biggest concern is bumping does that I don't know are there, bumping elk that I don't know are there. Maybe you blow a frickin', you blow a bunch of frickin' grouse or whatever off. I mean, I am constantly scanning out in front of me for other animals because the last thing you want is to get to 100 yards and blow out two cow elk that blow up over top of that saddle and take, as soon as they come flying up over there hauling ass, every mule deer in that basin knows something's up. They're out of there. So it's like just stuff like that that no one thinks of. Like, I am constantly scanning on my stalks with those binos. I'd probably use my binos to scan as much as I'm using my wind checker to check my wind and thermals, and I've constantly got that freaking thing out. But I would say those two things are almost simultaneously used. I'm checking the wind, I'm scanning. I'm checking the wind, I'm scanning. I mean, it's just a constant back and forth the entire way on that stalk. Without those, you're just focusing on your eyes, hoping to pick up movement. I'm trying to find shit that's bedded that I can reroute myself and be like, okay, I got to stop right here. I can't go any further. I got to wait for this doe and fawn to get up and move, or I've got to go a different route. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've had stalks get blown up because of another animal that I didn't even know was there because I wasn't using my binos enough. And I was actually going too fast, not scanning, and not harnessing the power of what's right on my freaking chest.
Oh, dude, and also think, like, once you shoot an animal for recovery.
Oh, God, yeah.
That
yeah.
almost might be, I mean, one that helps
First
you get
I
there.
Do.
But
yep.
it could be more important. Like, a couple of my bucks I shot the last couple of years, you know, you can get confirmation on what's going on. Like, I went over the hill, I saw a creepy piled up, but I'm like, I'm going to check on him for making it one step further. And yep. you can go through and be like, all right, yeah, confirmed, it's done.
Yep.
And then,
yep.
Well, I mean, 2018, my buck, he went over. I was unsure about the hit. It was he was quartering away. It was actually ended up being a perfect shot, but you know how you do that in your own head. You start doubting yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
I knew he ran into this flat, low spot. And I'm like, man, he's got to be in here somewhere. If you know, I didn't see him come out the other side, so I scanned it with my binos back and forth, and then boom, there he is. I could see a rack sticking up, and that's how I, you know, it's just that stuff that, you know, I might have backed out being unsure or too scared to continue, but something like yep. that I can't see with my naked eye can really, it can definitely change things on a hunt for you in a flash.
Oh, yeah, I agree 100%. I've trained myself, and even in practice I do this. The minute I shoot an arrow, my bow comes down, my binos come out, and they go on top of my top cam, and I use my bow and my top cam to steady my binos to see. I literally do that no matter whether I'm in the backyard or I'm out, because I immediately want to train myself to go to those binos to get on the animal to see where I hit, where's blood, what's it looking like. Like, that's the first thing I do. The minute that shot breaks, the bow's going down, the binos are going on the top cam, I'm using the bow to actually, like, steady myself like a tripod.
Yeah.
Tight against my body.
Yeah, and, see, like, tournament archers doing that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yep, and I mean, honestly, like, well, I picked up on that whenever I used to shoot, whenever I had my pro card and was shooting indoors, five spot in Vegas, you know, you're shooting at quarters, you're constantly trying to see, okay, do I need to make any clicks? Am I shooting just a touch right? Am I shooting a touch left? You know, you're constantly, the minute you shoot an arrow and it's timed, so you don't have all day to shoot your three or shoot your five. So you got to kind of be quick about it. So you learn, I picked up on that, honestly, shooting tournaments. And that was like the quickest way to figure out, instead of trying to freehand it and set your bow down, you use your bow to actually steady yourself, put your binos on top of the cam. And in the hunting world, it works great because there again, you know, you can use that to steady yourself, and you don't have to drop your bow or set your bow down. Like, you can just do it all in one motion. In 1 second, you're, yeah. you know, you're back in the game, and you're on your animal trying to see what the hell's going on. So, but yeah, no, you're spot on, man. I mean, after the shot, that's maybe one of the most important reasons to have a good set of binos, is to see what the hell actually took place.
Yeah, yeah. So that's got to be the tip of this episode, is like, if you're going to do optics, or if you don't have optics, get them. And then invest in ones, I guess.
Yep.
Is it fair to say invest in the best ones you can afford?
110%. I would tell you to buy a mid-level bow, or a mid-grade set of arrows, or, you know, the, you know.
Any equipment.
Like a, yeah, yeah. I mean, like a sight. I mean, that stuff's important. Yes, don't get me wrong. Like, it is, but. Maybe instead of buying the sight that has every bell and whistle for $400, you buy the one that's $200 that has second and third, but it doesn't have micro adjust. But you take that extra $200 and you buy a better set of binoculars that's like one grade up. Or instead of buying an 8x42, you buy the 10x42 because it's got a better field of view and it's got more magnification. Like, you know, find ways to make that happen and get the best optics you can absolutely afford. In the long run, you'll be happy you did, because that'll pay off more than having the sight that's got a few more bells and whistles, or having, you know, the flashier looking stabilizer set, or the arrows that have the cool wraps on them, or whatever the hell the case may be.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a good tip, I think. And I didn't know that beforehand. And I always looked at prices on optics as being like insane at sometimes, like, oh man.
Oh yeah.
You know,
oh,
but
dude, you can wrap up thousands in 10 minutes. Thousands.
Yeah, but, you know, it is, my binos are on me more than any other piece of equipment I have now. You know,
oh,
like,
yeah.
I went
yep.
out and scouted a piece this morning, and I could see a lot more in scouting this piece that I've never been on from a distance than I would going in there and jacking everything up right out the gate, you know?
Yep, absolutely. And, so. I mean, you know, it's, there's so many different valuable options on optics that we could spend 5 hours talking about the benefits of them. I mean, there is literally no negative. I mean, there's like, I've never went into the woods or went to a mountain or went to a 3D shoot or went on a hunt and was like, damn, I wish I didn't have my binos. I mean, right. Never. You're never going to do that.
I feel naked without them, man. I can't. Like, it eats me alive if I forget them. Like, if I'm like, ah, shit, I left them in my scent crusher closet or whatever, and I dip out, I'm like, I feel absolutely just useless right now.
Yep, absolutely, man. For sure.
Well,
I agree.
Well, man, I think the optic talk was good, you know, for guys who've never been out west or are planning to go out west if they haven't had the optics discussion. I feel like that's always super important to kind of open your eyes to. But I mean, other than that, man, what's after Colorado? Like, what's the next big game plan?
So I'm out here for up to 2 weeks. Hopefully get it done, and I don't need that long, but we'll grind through it and do what we got to do. And then 17th, head back to Utah on an over-the-counter bull tag. So super pumped to
elk.
Yep, super pumped to go out there, man. I'm going to go in solo. I'm sure Devin and some of them guys will probably come up and bump into me a little bit during the week, but going to spend 6 or 7 days out there, man, chasing bugles. Fucking so stoked to get out there. I didn't get to hunt elk last year.
Dude, we got to do an elk hunt together. I got points brewing up out there.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I applied for a tag. I didn't get it, so I picked up an over-the-counter tag. Man, just stoked, dude. So stoked to get out there, and it's going to be right in the middle of rut. I mean, bulls should just be freaking going nuts. And then my whitetail season will kick off like 3 days after I get back for that. And then I think right around Halloween, I'm going to go back to Utah and go hunt mule deer, go catch the mule deer rut. Probably hook up with Devin and Jason and all them guys, man, and go give it hell for a week and you try to fill that tag. I mean, I had so much fun last year, man. That
mule deer rut, man.
Yeah, man, that mule deer rut, dude, that's just fun. Gosh dang, it's fun, man. I mean, I have everyone's like, I can't believe you're going to leave the whitetail rut. And I'm like, I'll be honest, man.
It's always there, though.
Yeah, it's there, and I'll be honest, dude, I like early and late. I mean, like, I like patterns, and I love to hunt, like, the chess match, and the rut's fun because it's unknown, but I mean, honestly, like, I don't feel bad missing it, dude. Like,
yeah, I get that, but
I would rather chase the muley rut. It's more intense. There's just more to it, and I'm honestly, like, I'll be out there enjoying myself, and I'll never once be like, fuck, I wish I was at home in a tree right now. Whereas if I was at home in a tree, I'd be like, Devin, what'd you see? What? How many bucks you run into today? You know, I mean, it's just like, I don't know, man. Like, that mule deer rut, dude, it's intense. It's, I mean, anyone that wants to go hunt a deer rut and see, like, hardcore rutting activity, you need to hunt coos deer or hunt mule deer. Because they rut hard. Like, double any whitetail rut that I've seen. I mean, I watched bucks fight, chase, growl, frick. I mean, dude, it's like I saw more rutting action last year in 1 week in Utah than I have seen in Ohio, PA, Kentucky, and Illinois in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's as far as like the aggressive like rut behavior of just full bore, like, throw caution to the wind. All that they're worried about is the does. Man, it's just like, I don't know. I mean, and I think around my neck of the woods in Ohio, we have a lot of does, and that definitely doesn't help your rut. I mean, it's good to have does, but when the numbers are out of whack, I mean, it's not helping. I mean, it's not helping you at all because they don't have to compete. They don't have to fight. They don't, like, that desire to breed. They're just like, oh, okay, so Julie's over here with those 3 bucks. Oh, fuck it. I'll just go over here and breed Beth. She's right over the hill.
Right,
like,
right.
It's fine. You know, it's fine. Like, whereas out there, you know, there might be one or two does in a square mile that's in heat. Guess what? There's 15 bucks in that basin just absolutely going wild because there's not 97 does that live there. You know what I mean? There's like a couple little groups. It's all spread out different, you know, like the does aren't all clustered together in one just spot. So you got bucks constantly bouncing back and forth and really seeking, really searching. And you know, it's just, yeah, man, it's, and dude, that's such a run and gun game. You're just covering miles and miles trying to find the rut party.
Yeah,
and once
yeah.
you find it, and once you find it, dude, you're like, if you find it at 6 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, like, you're in it till dark. I mean, those bucks are just going to chase. The does are going to run. I mean, like, you're just freaking going for it. Like, and I just, that's fun, man. I love that shit.
Yeah, I got to get out there and do another archery or do, like, a good archery mule deer hunt.
Yeah.
But I'm craving another elk hunt, man. But I got points. I got Utah points. I want to start applying for units, you know?
Yeah, hell yeah. And, dude, you could draw over-the-counter tags in Utah any year, dude. Any year. Over-the-counter.
I'm thinking next year I'm going to go.
Yeah, you should. You should, dude. You definitely should. I mean, there's the best way to learn how to elk hunt is elk hunt. The best way to learn how to mule deer hunt is mule deer hunt. I mean, and I'll stand by that because I've got my teeth kicked in for years. But and by no means am I, like, what I would consider a great elk hunter or a great mule deer hunter. But I am, you know, at this point, I would say I am an average or maybe a little better, and that's a far cry from where I was 3 years ago. But that's because I have started at the bottom rung and worked my way up, and I've figured it out by getting my ass kicked, what works, what doesn't. And that's, if you want to get good at anything, that's what you got to do. I guess that's just all there is to it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I need to start mapping some stuff out and seeing where I want to go and all that. But it's, I got to figure it all out. I haven't thought that far ahead yet. You know,
we can do some planning, dude. We need to just, we need to just plan.
Well, let's do it. When you get back from Colorado, let's,
pencil it out and just
yeah, you must be getting further west because you're starting to cut out, which that's a good sign for you. And he can't hear anything I'm saying, I don't think. But did you hear any of that?
No, repeat that.
Oh, I said I was kind of just talking to the listeners, like, oh, he's losing service. He must be getting further west.
No, dude, it says I've got 3 bars of 4G.
Oh, you're cutting out. That's all
no
good.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's all good, man. But yeah, dude, that's awesome, man. I hope you have a safe trip, especially 2 weeks by yourself. But hopefully you kill one early and you can save some of your time off and apply it elsewhere. Beautiful. Road trip podcast.
Yeah.
Did you hear me?
I can't believe I'm cutting out because I've got 4 bars of freaking 4G. So that's crazy. I guess that's God telling us it's time to wrap it.
Yeah, I guess it is, man. Hey, good luck to you, brother. I have a feeling you'll get on a good one. You always figure it out. Adaptability, you can figure out wherever you are.
I'm gonna get hell, that's for sure, man.
Well, go ahead and close out. Tell the, you know, leave the people with a word of advice, and hopefully they can hear it. And if not, then we'll just realize it wasn't meant to be for them to hear your advice.
Dude, hunting season's here. I mean, word of advice, man. Just have a good time. Remember why you're out there, whether it's a deer hunt, an elk hunt, mule deer hunt, a squirrel hunt. I don't give a shit what you're hunting. Remember why you're out there. Be out there for the right reasons. Enjoy yourself. And just freaking give it all you got. It doesn't go as planned. I mean, honestly, it's better than a day of work any day. Can't thank guys enough for comments, likes, support, followers, dude. I mean, it blows my mind every day how many guys honestly, like, actually give a shit about what I'm doing, because truth be told, I'm not that big on social media half the time. I don't even give a shit about what I'm doing on there. I'd be doing all this whether there was Instagram or Facebook, but I absolutely love that, you know, people do read my stuff and comment and give me feedback, and I appreciate the hell out of it, and I hope someday I get to buy each and every one of you a beer, try to answer everybody's questions whenever I get to them, and I try to make sure I, you know, help out as many guys and gals as I can. And yeah, man, just appreciate the fuck out of everybody that supports this podcast and supports us. And hell yeah, man, just freaking, when you bend the limbs back this year, make it count. That's, I'm going to sign it out like that.
Cool. All right. Thanks everyone for listening. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.